So I started hiding my hand at 13. I was heading to a new high school that was co-ed. I had been in all girls school before that. And I got on that bus that day to go to school, Aaron, a yellow school bus. I took my little hand and I don't know what made me do it. Like, I think it was probably the need, you know, any teenager can feel this. They just want to fit in and they want to be like everybody else. And so I just tucked it quietly into the front pocket of my jeans that day, never imagining that it would last beyond that day, that week. Definitely wasn't going to last that year. And yet it lasted 25 years. And I hid my hand from everyone for 25 years. Everyone looks like they have it all together on social media, right, Aaron? Like, it can feel like a vicious trap when you sit there and you watch and you say, well, how come I'm alone then? How come I'm struggling?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Aaron. It's another episode of the Simply Overcoming podcast. Thank you for coming back. I am so excited about today's guest, and I hope you are too. I highly recommend that you stick around for this episode and that you don't go away, because if you deal with a difference in your life, whether it be physical, whether it be mental, whether it's seen or unseen, this episode is an episode that you absolutely don't want to miss. It could change your life. So, Ruth Rathblatt, thank you so much for being willing to be on the podcast today.
Aaron, thank you so much for inviting me. And you're absolutely right. It's for those who feel like they have a difference, whether it's seen or unseen, or even people who have a family member with a difference, you know, because it does. The beauty of disability and differences is that they don't discriminate. They can happen to anyone at any time, any age, any race, any gender. And so, yeah, for those of us who have felt like we had to hide our differences, this is definitely for them.
Awesome. And I think that there are a lot of people out there who are living in the shadows, trying to hide their difference because they're afraid of what people will think or, you know, how the world will respond to them. And so your story is just a testament to greatness. And, you know, and now I'm sitting here in front of you and you're confident, you're smart, you're beautiful. I mean, you've come so far in your life and you're continuing to grow as we all are. And it's just so awesome to see how your life has taken this amazing turn. And so you're a motivational speaker, you're a writer, you're an advocate. You do a lot of things, and you've worn a lot of hats in your life, I know as well. And you've worked with a lot of nonprofit organizations. Talk to me briefly about you know, some of the nonprofits that you've worked with.
Yeah, my whole career, as you said, I mean, you know, it's funny when you opened this with all the things that I am now, it made me realize there were times that it wasn't like this. And that's what's strange too, like to think back to not so long ago that I didn't feel confident. I didn't feel beautiful. I definitely was afraid that people would judge me and not think I was able. And so I hid for so long. And in my professional career, I have been a nonprofit leader who has focused on expanding opportunities for young people, whether it be through mentoring, whether it be through education or careers. And what's interesting, I've always focused on that. And a few years ago, I was in a leadership role where we were talking about the diversity of leadership in the organization. And I posed a question back to the group to say, do you see me as diverse? And the answer back, Aaron, was, well, you're a woman. And while that lens is an important part of diversity, I said, well, what about my limb difference? Isn't that part of, like, how do you see that? And I was told that they didn't see me that way. And
amazing.
So what that made, yeah, they didn't see me that way as it not only is having a disability, but also because I think there's a hierarchy in disability of how we define disability and what gets counted and what doesn't. And the important piece is it wasn't part of the diversity language either. So it wasn't acknowledged as diversity. And as I started to kind of look at all these different corporations and what they were doing with diversity and inclusion initiatives, I started to realize I hadn't felt included for a really long time in those discussions, because while we talk about really important pillars of diversity and inclusion around race and gender, and maybe sexual orientation sometimes slips into those conversations, we often don't include disability, the visible or the invisible, those mental health challenges or neurodiversity challenges or limb differences like mine. And so it started me on this passion project of how do I expand the definition of diversity and how can I be part of that so that it is much more inclusive?
So is it your thought that a large part of that is just lack of education, people not thinking about it, people not realizing?
I think there's a piece of it that way. I think in terms of the not realizing and not recognizing, I also think there's a piece of how we define things is how we talk about them. And so if we're only willing to talk about certain areas and not kind of think more broadly, and Aaron, I think it comes sometimes from a scarcity mindset of, oh, these are the resources that are available, so we have to use them here. And if we include others, we won't be able to bring forth conversations. And I really believe that there's enough room at the table for all of us to have those conversations and to be included, including disability. And I think the hard part for me, Aaron, is that disability is the largest minority group out there. It cuts across all lines. It doesn't matter, as I said, what race you are, what gender you are, what age you are. It's one of those things that, and it can happen to anyone in our families or in our lives or to ourselves. And so when I see that disability isn't included, it's also, I guess, at the core of it, the most intersectional of all of the lenses of diversity, because you can be any, as I said, any race, any gender, any sexual orientation, and still have a disability. And so that include yourself in that group. So I think you're right. There's the recognition piece, the realization, but I think it's the way we talk about it and define it. And so my job is really redefining diversity to be much more inclusive.
So redefining, expanding so that people are much more aware. Is this what you do in your travels as well, is trying to educate people in this way?
Yeah, I'm trying to. So one of the things that's interesting is I am trying to educate. It's really by planting seeds, because what I do is I share my story of difference and how I hid for so many years and felt like I was the only one hiding. I was so alone, so afraid, to your point from before, around the fear of judgment and fear of not thinking, people thinking I wasn't able, people not finding me attractive, that whole thing. So I hid to present myself as someone with two hands. And what I've come to realize in that space of understanding hiding is that so many of us hide parts of ourselves. It's interesting, a Deloitte study in 2013 that showcased 61% of people hide a part of themselves in the workplace. Huh. Well, I actually think that number is higher. But if we're all sitting here hiding, thinking we're the only ones, how are we actually showing up and not? Because it's exhausting because we're so afraid that someone's going to find out about that hidden part. How are we showing up as our full selves at work with our most creative energies and our most productive selves?
It's a lonely place to be in too. Such a lonely place to be. I love it. I love what you're doing. That's so awesome. I would really love to jump into your personal story. And so you were born with a limb difference.
Correct. And it was called, back then it was called a congenital birth defect, which recently, when I've been writing a book, Grammarly pointed out, because it's part of my story, Grammarly pointed out, that's probably not the right term anymore. And I'm like, thank you, Grammarly, for saying that, because I agree with you. It's not the right term. It's a limb difference. It's a disability.
Okay. So a limb difference. So you were born with this, and talk to me about how your parents interacted with you being born this way.
Yeah, it was the age before sonograms. So I was a total surprise to my parents. And so my mom and my dad weren't definitely not expecting this when I was their first child. And in the hospital room, the nurse noticed that my mom was upset, and the doctor took my father out of the room to talk to him about it. They came back in, and the nurse took them aside and said, you're going to take this little girl home. You're going to treat her as you would any other child. You're going to love her and treat her as normal. And that's what they did, Aaron. They encouraged me to try everything. What was hard, and the message I got, was when you treat something as normal and you don't talk about it, you don't talk about it. You don't give space for the experience of it or the feelings of it. Mm-hmm. And so in my family, I learned we don't talk about my limb difference. It wasn't something, I think my parents were super supportive in terms of encouraging me to do things and try things. And they were also very solution oriented, you know, because I grew up in a time when we didn't talk about disability in the same way as we do today. And there wasn't the internet to kind of connect us to people who also have limb differences. They navigated a very lonely road themselves. And so they tried to find outlets, whether it was my father finding a woman who had a limb difference and was using a hook, or there was a broadcast journalist who had a Bree Walker who had webbed fingers. And so he tried to show me different people. And then at one point they got me a prosthesis to kind of, they noticed I was hiding a lot and they said, oh, we should do something about it. They got me a cosmetic prosthesis. So it was always solution focused. The piece that was missing, and I talked to my father about this now, is the feelings part, creating space for how was I feeling as, you know, going through this, because it was lonely, to your point. It was definitely, there were things that were challenging, the questions from people saying, oh my God, what happened to your hand, when they would see it, the people that would stare. That's probably one of the toughest parts about having a disability, is people who stare or just look away because they can't handle it. Or the people who shush other kids who say, oh, don't ask her about that. So we're constantly teaching people to not deal with disability because either they're looking away or they're silencing questions and curiosity.
That's really interesting. I think about myself in this conversation and how I grew up. I grew up relatively sheltered, not really very many friends. And so when I started interacting with the world in my late teens, you know, I had to learn how to interact with people around me who were different than me. And thankfully, you know, my parents raised me to accept everyone. And so it wasn't really an issue, but it was definitely something that I'd never had to think about when I was growing up. And so I love when kids are thrust into situations where they do get to spend time with people who are different than them and understand that we're all together in this life, and there is people who have differences than we do. So,
and the truth is, Aaron, all of us are different, right? We all have some difference. It isn't actually just because mine is physical and you see it. That's mine, but everyone, and that's how I explain it to young people. And I think that's why I've appreciated the work that I've been able to do over the 25 plus years, is that showcasing to kids that though your life, you may have been born into challenge, you can think about opportunities and ways to go beyond it. And I have to say, having challenges in your life is actually a good thing, because it helps you think outside the box. It helps you be creative. It is part of what makes me me. It's not all of me. My limb difference isn't all of me. My hiding was the part that changed how I interacted in my life. And I think my parents, when you ask the question about how my parents, it sounds like your parents did a great job in terms of being able to have acceptance. My parents definitely wanted me to accept everyone. The challenge was just that feelings piece, like what was going on, and what sometimes we don't tune into how people are feeling about certain pieces of their life. We just make assumptions, or we don't want to ask because we're afraid we'll upset them. I like when people ask, like, hey, what's been going on? And I realized through a last job that I wasn't sharing out my story. I may not have been physically hiding it anymore, but I was still hiding because I wasn't talking about the experience. And so that's why this passion project has also taken on greater significance, because it's important to talk about the feelings that are behind not just the hiding, but what it's like to have a disability or a difference.
Man, there's so many things to unpack there. First of all, you know, a little later in the episode, I was going to bring this up, but I'll bring it up now because you said it. And that is that, you know, what does this difference thing even mean? I mean, we throw it out there, but, you know, growing up, I was always, and I think maybe some are brought up differently, but it seems like in our society today, it seems like people are heading in the direction more of, it's great to be different. Right? Like, difference is great. You don't want to be like everybody else. And so, I think that's awesome. I think that's great, we're trying to accept these things into our society, because you're right. Everybody is different. We all have differences, and that definitely does not define my differences. Do not define me, just as your differences do not define you, but it's definitely a part of your incredible story of growth. And you can use that in such a powerful way to reach other people who may be going through similar circumstances that you went through. I mean, that's just so awesome. That's so great.
No, thank you for saying that. And to add on to what you're saying too, is there is a feeling, and you're absolutely right, there's a theme now of celebrating difference, right? And this idea of what are your unique pieces of yourself, et cetera. There's still a juxtaposition though with also wanting people to fit in, right? Like, there's this interesting balance of, we want you to be different, and we want you to fit in, especially as it relates to the workplace, like fit into the culture, fit into what we're saying, but be yourself. Well, those things aren't always congruent. Like, they don't always go together. And so how do we continue to build out that idea of our differences are our gifts, they're the uniqueness. And how do we continue to build out the culture of celebrating difference?
It's kind of like that easier said than done thing. It's so easy for people to just say, yeah, let's accept the differences. But then when it is in the workplace, or when it is out there in society, it gets treated a little differently, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think a piece of it is, we say we want that latter part, right? We say we want people to show up as their authentic selves in the workplace, and what difference looks like. And yet, do we really? Because are we prepared for that in the workplace? Because if I have a mental health challenge and I can't come to work, or I come to work in my state of with my mental health in check or not in check that day, do you really want to see that? Are we prepared for what that really can look like? Mm. And I think workplaces and spaces have to really think about what that means. I think it's a beautiful thing to be able to be at the same time. Workplaces are operating centers, right? I think it's about leadership and managers and employees creating spaces so you can have conversations about what's challenging, not just dismissing it and saying, we just need to be productive, we need to perform, but how do we actually show up and have that space to say, hey, I'm having a tough day. And I'm still going to get the job done, but I need you to know this piece of me, because I trust you with this information. And here's potentially an accommodation I may need. To Aaron, it is absolutely leadership's responsibility, manager's responsibility, and employee's responsibility to have those conversations. It's not just one of those people.
Everyone has to work together. And we're not machines, right? We're humans. We're definitely not machines. And sometimes I think we're treated as machines, like that robot that flips the burgers.
Or, you know, I share this definitely in my TEDx, but I was at 20 years old, had an internship at a law firm, and the manager there was concerned about my productivity and performance, never thinking about or asking me about my person. And that was an important integral part of my success on that job would have been if he had created that safe place to say, hey, I'm hiding my hand, so I'm not doing up to the job that I know I should be doing. So instead I left his office embarrassed and had to figure out ways to complete the job because I didn't have that space. And part of that space, Aaron, comes from curiosity, right? Building curiosity, being curious as a manager or a leader, saying, hey, what's going on? How are you doing? What's happening here? I'm curious.
Interaction creates curiosity. And this is why I think it's so important for people to interact. People who are in a position like a manager, they need to be interacting and being curious. That's how this podcast started, is curiosity. And it's blossomed into what it is now. But it all started from like that curiosity, because I want to have these conversations, these authentic conversations, and hear the stories of others.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And when you said interaction leads to curiosity, and you can flip it too, right? Curiosity leads to interaction. Because that's true. Like when you're curious and when you share part of yourself, yeah, people open up. That's what I found, is it's so interesting when you're curious about someone and you give them the space to open up, then you feel connection. And that's the piece of it too, is interaction and connection are related as well, right?
Yeah. Oh, amazing. So this is a great segue into talking about, you know, at what point in your life did you start hiding your hand?
So I started hiding my hand at 13. I was heading to a new high school that was co-ed. I had been in all girls school before that. And my parents sent me to a co-ed high school. And I got on that bus that day to go to school, Aaron, a yellow school bus. And I took my little hand, and I don't know what made me do it. Like, I think it was probably the need at, you know, any teenager can feel this. They just want to fit in and they want to be like everybody else. And so I just tucked it quietly into the front pocket of my jeans that day, never imagining, because it was the first time I'd ever really done that, that it would last beyond that day, that week. Definitely wasn't going to last that year. And yet it lasted 25 years. And I hid my hand from everyone for 25 years. And it's incredible to think that, you know, there was, first of all, it was exhausting. It overwhelmed my mind, because that's all I thought about all the time, was this idea of I have to hide. I was constantly forecasting next steps so as not to be discovered, so that people wouldn't find it. So I never was really enjoying my life or relaxing. I was never present in my life because I was always worried about next. A friend of mine even talks about, we went on a road trip and we stopped at a friend's house for dinner on the way back to college. And she said, "Ruth, you sat down, and before you sat down, you said, 'Please sit next to me.'" And she's like, "I don't care. I'll sit next to you." "Sure." At the dinner table. She said, "Because you were so worried that this family was going to say grace and have to hold hands, and you didn't want anyone to have to hold your hand." I'm like, wow, I was that mindful all the time of having to worry, when was I going to be, would I have to show my hand at some point? What was that going to feel like? And so, yeah, it was completely exhausting and definitely lonely. And I didn't talk about how I was doing. I just made it look really easy for everyone else.
Do you think that after a while it became somewhat unconscious of you to do that?
Totally. It became part of my norm. I thought that this is the way I lived and I would live for the rest of my life. I did not see any other way out. I had experimented with the idea of what would it be like to not hide. And I always went back into my pattern, because it's a little bit like, and I know I say this, is it's a little bit like lying. You know, when you tell the first lie and then it's really hard to get out of that first lie. So you tell another lie to cover up on that lie, and then another lie, because, well, that lie, I have to tell about that lie. And that was what hiding was like for me, is once I started to hide, it became really hard to unhide it and to start to show it, because I didn't know when to out it and I didn't know how to. Until some things changed in my life.
I want to talk about those things that changed in your life, but I can only imagine, and I know you talked about this in your TED Talks, but I can only imagine how difficult it would be to live through life in that manner. I mean, there's so many things that you wouldn't be able to do. I mean, you can't wear a swimsuit, you can't go to the beach. There's certain many things that you can't experience in life because you're hiding who you are, you know, the beauty of who you are.
I stopped living my life. It's absolutely true. I stopped doing the things I had enjoyed doing. I had grown up doing all types of sports, stopped doing that. I had been part of theater performances as a kid, stopped doing that. Student government, stopped doing that because I was so afraid of being seen. And yet, and it's interesting, I went recently to see the woman, Allie Stroker, who won the Tony for Oklahoma, and she's in a wheelchair. And she talked about, it was a one woman show, and she came out and she talked about in high school, this wanting to be seen and fitting in piece, and that she used musical theater as her way to fit in and be seen. And I started to cry, Aaron, because I realized, wow, that's what I struggled with, is just this idea of wanting to fit in and wanting to be seen. And she followed her dream. I gave mine up. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard, that now what I'm appreciative of is that I get a second chance. Mm. I get to be almost reborn because I'm not hiding anymore and I'm talking about it.
I love that, Ruth. I love it. And I want to talk about your transformation to where you are today, but I'm just going to talk to the listeners for a second. You know, if you're listening to this episode and you're enjoying it as much as I am, if it's resonating with you in some way, I challenge you to share this. Share this with just one person in your life, because I truly believe that this could change somebody's life. And so I want to encourage you to do that. You know, you can follow us on Instagram, Simply Overcoming on Instagram. We're on Facebook. You know, we're starting to film these episodes now, so you can find them on YouTube, you can find them on Spotify. And so, yeah, we're out there. Share this with somebody. I know it may change their life. So, Ruth, talk to me about how you got from that, you know, scared girl that was afraid of people seeing who you were to this confident woman that you are now.
Yeah, it's been a journey, Aaron. While there was journaling and therapy involved, I think the other piece that was really significant is I met someone who taught me how to love that part of myself that I found so unlovable. And that person truly, literally showed me how to look at my hand. I had never looked at my hand because it had been buried so deeply in my pocket that I had never actually taken the time to look at it. I'd never touched it. And that resulted in years of frostbite wear because I never knew how to protect it and to keep it warm. I had never actually really honestly loved it or looked at it because it became a part of me that I, in many ways, disassociated. It was not part of me. And so that person showed me how to love myself and how to cherish my hand. And what was amazing about that is then the other doors started to open, because little by little, I started to let other people in. And that's how I met our mutual friend, Julie, because what we were able to find an organization called the Lucky Finn Project, where it's a group of people with limb differences like mine and Julie's that have, for adults, we have felt alone our whole lives. And for kids, they get to see each other and connect with each other, but their parents and the children get to see role models also of people who have lived their life and have gone on to be successful, have overcome challenges, have fallen in love, all the things that I think parents worry about for their kids naturally. Parents with kids with disabilities worry about them intensely. And so that group of finding people with similar lived experience was super powerful, because for the first time, I didn't feel alone. I actually felt connected to others. And then I realized that I needed to start sharing out my message, because to your point and what you were saying to your listeners, it is about sharing out your story with one other person, so that if you can have an impact that maybe, hey, I'm hiding, or I don't like this part of myself and I can't show it, I can't reveal it to someone, I can't tell someone about it, whether it's a disability or part of your family background or your education or your race or your gender, all of those pieces, it's about the one-on-one. We can do this one at a time, and that's the impact. And so I started to share out my story. And the beautiful part is when I started getting comfortable with my difference, people started getting comfortable and telling me about their differences and saying, oh my God, I have struggled with, whether it's a guy who came up to me with a stutter and said, wow, this is the first time I have felt included in these kind of conversations around diversity, or someone who said, thank you so much for being real in your story, because you talk about how you still struggle, Ruth. I'm struggling, she said, on a mental health journey. And I needed to hear that message today, because everyone looks like they have it all together on social media, right, Aaron? Like, everyone seems like they're posting the photos of how great their lives are. And we know that there are people who are struggling and aren't sharing that stuff, but yet it can feel like a vicious trap when you sit there and you watch and you say, well, how come I'm alone then? How come I'm struggling?
This is bringing up emotions in my personal life, Ruth, because of things in my past. And I hope that the people who are listening at home can learn something from today's conversation. What do you, and I know we were talking about this a little bit, but what is the importance of sharing your story? I mean, that is how this podcast started, is giving a platform for average people, extraordinary average people, because I don't think anybody is average. I think everybody is extraordinary in some way, to be able to share their story. And what's amazing, and what I've seen, Ruth, through doing this, it's not about me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not even about the people who are listening. It's about the person who's sharing. And it's huge for people to be able to share their story with a community who appreciates what they're hearing.
And it may be the first time that someone's hearing it, right? Like, it may be the first time that something clicks, to your point, where someone can get an emotional reaction and be like, wow, I didn't even realize I was hiding, or I didn't even realize that someone else has felt like this too. And I know for me, I think about my 18-year-old self, and wow, what I would have done to listen to someone like me talk about hiding, and it didn't have to be so hard. That would have been an amazing gift. And so now that's the hope, that when I speak, I can share that with others, so that somebody says, I don't have to be so alone. Because the world is, we don't have to be alone. We can feel connected with each other. And that's the beauty of what we've all been through over the past 2 years, is the recognition that we need people. We need to be connected. We don't have to be isolated from each other. And it's also forced us to have a lot of time for introspection on how do we want to be living our lives? What do we want to be doing? And I can tell you, I have no interest in going back to hiding myself at all.
So, okay, there's somebody at home listening to this podcast. Maybe they're driving down the road. Maybe they're out for a run and they're hiding. They're shutting themselves off from the world. They're living a lie because of who they are. They're afraid of the world seeing who they are. What is step number one, Ruth? What is that first step that that person needs to take right now, today, to move in the direction of growth and accepting and feeling it safe to let the world know who they truly are?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's going to be different for everyone, but I think the answer that I would give if someone needed that quick cure to say, oh, what can I do today, is owning it first, right? Saying out loud to yourself, this, I'm hiding. Wow, I've been hiding this part of myself. And then finding a really close friend who doesn't have judgment and letting them know. Because once you start to let that voice out of the box, it can't go back in. And you can't push it back in, as much as you try. If you tell one person and let them know, this is what I'm struggling with, then you start to on the path. And for me, it was absolutely, as I shared, there was therapy involved. It was getting involved with that. It was finding resources. I mean, the way I found Lucky Finn was so unique. I was starting the process, and I'm really, when I think back how clear this was, not only had I met someone who showed me how to love that part of myself, which I think is a critical part. When you let others in, they can show you how to love yourself for those parts that you find unlovable, because you can't do that work alone. That's the beauty to this whole piece too, is this is not a job that you can do by yourself. I thought therapy was really helpful. Journaling was super helpful. And then I was starting to explore this path. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do around the idea of my difference and talking about it. And I was randomly at a pharmacy in my neighborhood, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw a woman with one arm similar to mine. And I started asking her questions, and she about, did she hide? Did she, what was it like for her growing up, et cetera? And we realized we had a lot of shared pieces of background. And she said, well, you know, there's a whole group of people like us online. And that's the power of the internet. She said, have you ever heard of the Lucky Finn Project? Now, Aaron, I wasn't sure if that was the Lucky Charms commercial or if it was Wounded Warrior Project. Like, I didn't know. I'd never heard of this Lucky Finn Project. And she said, yeah, go back. There's a Facebook group, et cetera. I rushed home and looked and started to be like, wow, there are other people like me that have a limb difference. I thought I was alone my entire life. And so whether you're struggling with a physical disability like mine, a mental health challenge, something in your family background, that's the beauty of the internet, is that it's connecting us to others. And we don't have to be in the same room at the same point, seeing them at a pharmacy to know that we're not alone. It changed my life. Huh. And they had this amazing picnic that I went to outside of Detroit. And all of a sudden I saw so many people who looked like me. And again, it was almost surreal, because as I drove up there, Aaron, I thought, why am I going to this? Like, first of all, why do I need this? What is this? And I said, and by the way, I'm just starting to get comfortable with my difference. It's kind of the thing that makes me unique. It makes me cool. What am I going to do with all these people who also have limb differences? How am I going to fit? You know, how am I going to be unique? And it was very easy all of a sudden to feel like there are still uniquenesses within limb difference. But Lucky Finn has absolutely changed my life. And I'm so grateful to the power of the mutual aid support group, to the leadership there, Molly and her team. It's a really amazing organization that connects. So when you ask, what should people do? A, saying it out loud, and then finding others who are going through it as well.
Verbalizing your intentions, finding somebody that you trust, and then finding a community that you can be a part of. How can people, if somebody is interested in looking further into the Lucky Finn Project, is it luckyfinproject.org?
It is the luckyfinproject.org.
Okay.
And it's really easy. They have a website, but they also have a Facebook group, and they're on Instagram. And you know, what's beautiful about it is, the more and more, I think when I first started, there were, I think, 30,000 people who are viewing it. It's now over 70,000 people who are, you know, part of this group. So it's amazing. And at the picnic's grown from 500 to 800. Then we had no COVID. Now we're having a picnic in July this year, fingers crossed. So yeah, just bringing people together in community. And so it's an amazing organization. But again, wherever your difference is, there are supports out there. That's the thing, is you don't have to do this alone anymore.
Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome. That's so true. I don't want people at home to be feeling like we're pulling a wool over their eyes, because, and I'm going to guess you're probably the first one that would admit that this has been a process for you. This hasn't happened overnight. Something like this does not happen overnight. You were hiding for so long. Coming out of that and accepting that and being willing to show the world who you truly were, and then getting from that point to where you are now, where you're actually sharing with others and making a difference in the world. This took time, right? So don't feel discouraged if you feel like you want to take that step, but you forget to realize that this, you're going to fall back. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to fall back into those old patterns, but keep moving forward, because your life is going to be so much better for it. And you might discover who you truly are by doing this.
Absolutely. It was not an overnight process. You're so right in stressing that, because this was a process over time. And there are moments that I still struggle. I still struggle as I ended a relationship and now I'm back online and found this whole world of dating apps, which, Aaron, is a crazy world if you don't know it, but it's an intense world, I will say. And it's the choice of whether I reveal on there or not, given how much of a beauty impact we still, or beauty image we still have of people with disabilities. And so do I share it? Do I not share it? And I've come to what I, for me, is the best solution, which is, I don't share it in my dating profile, but I share it if I think someone is what I call handworthy. Do they get to know? I make the choice. Do you get to know about this part of myself? Because so many of us, even if you don't have a disability, are hiding parts of ourselves. Like, we've been talking about this whole conversation, that you're not putting it on a dating app, right? Like, you're not spilling all your stuff out there in the dating world. So why do I need to? How can I make sure that this person is handworthy? Do they get to know? Should they know about it? But there's still struggles about it. Like if someone rejects me, I do think, oh, well, is it because of my hand? And you know what? It's my hand has become a great weeder out of people too, of this person isn't the right person.
I think that there's a difference between hiding yourself and protecting yourself. And you have every right to protect yourself in a situation like that. And you shouldn't feel guilty in doing that, you know?
No, well, because people do it all the time, right? People don't tell you, I mean, there are people who don't tell you their correct age. There are people who don't tell you their height. There are people that don't tell you about their family background or their marriage challenges, like mental health. We don't ask them to reveal. So yeah, I think it's a process of getting to know someone and seeing if, you know, if you want to share that, those pieces of yourself. I will say I am truly grateful for the person who helped me love that part of myself. And I will definitely be indebted for a really long time.
You know, we're 40 minutes into this episode and I have a couple other things I want to run by you. But when I was driving over here to the studio to have this conversation with you, rather, I was just thinking about how boring the world would be if we were all the same. You know, it would be such a boring place.
Totally. It's what makes us unique. It's cool. It's different. That's what we can. And that's where the curiosity thing is too, because imagine if we were all the same and we had the same answers when people asked us the same questions, that's boring. Yeah. No, there's adventure in life. There's so much more to life. And yes, thank God we're not all the same.
Oh yeah. I want to go to the adventure part of things because Ruth, I know that you really enjoy your travel.
I do. It's the thing that was so hard initially about COVID was the idea of I have to give up traveling. And again, I know I'm not the only one, but yeah, that was super hard. There's so many places to explore in this world, so many different cultures to see and to taste and to smell, and it opened my mind. So yeah, I love travel.
I can relate to you on that. And you know, being in the US for, I guess, the last year without being able to travel, or at least not having a chance to go out and travel much other than within the United States, I'm starting to get antsy. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to be humbled because what happens when you visit a third world country, because that's a lot of my traveling has to do with visiting third world countries, you become humbled and you really appreciate your life and who you are and where you live. And it's amazing to see how some of these people are living in a little mud hut with a tarp over top to keep the rain from coming through. And they're just worried about eating once a day. They're just trying to figure out how they can get that plate of rice once a day. And yet they're happy. They've got their family and they have life and they have their health, and that's all that is important to them. And so it's awesome. I want to talk to you about travel and your limb difference. Has it been a challenge for you in any way?
Yeah. And I just want to touch on the point that you just said, because I think the other piece to that equation, right, is when you share your life with people in other countries, they wonder, why are you doing what you're like? How do you live like that? Why do you live in New York City? Like, for me, how could you do that? I would never want to live there. I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't imagine not living here. But yes, we each have our challenges and the way that we want to live. And then when we go somewhere else, we see other people live differently. And yet they're mirroring back that same curiosity and questioning, like, this is how you live? Like, they're thinking that same way. It's interesting. I share this in my TEDx definitely, but my limb difference, there's definitely a staring part of when you travel and people haven't seen things, right? I mean, it happens all the time. I was traveling with a group of young students to Nepal, and people in Nepal had never seen a group of African-American students I don't think in that large of a cluster, let alone that dark of a skin. And my students immediately, and people would come up, Aaron, and they would touch my students' hair, they would touch their skin. And the students reacted as, oh, well, they're racist here. And I said, No, they're not racist. They're curious. They said, but they're staring and they're affecting boundaries and, you know, they're touching and they're whatever. And I said, and I'm trying to protect them. I'm in mama bear mode of, you know, please back off. Don't do that. And I shared with my students, I said, by the way, this happens to me all the time. You're getting it for the first time because you're traveling outside the US, but it happens to me even in the US. I have people staring at my hand all the time. I have people, Aaron, who go out and touch my hand, make it almost like a show and tell thing out there. I have people who want to pray for me that my hand will grow. And they will grab my hand and say, I'm going to pray for you. And I'm like, it doesn't work like that. I don't think, like, I will take the prayers, but this isn't
boundaries, really. Just a little bit of boundaries.
Yeah. And so, when I was, and I also think people make assumptions. And so when I was fortunate to go to Belize last summer and I went zip lining, and I noticed one of my friends had told me, when you go zip lining, you want to make sure you have those padded gloves. Have you ever been zip lining, Aaron? Mm-hmm. So, you know, those padded gloves that you hold on to, because it's an important part of the rope part, the wire, mm-hmm. that you don't want to hurt your hand. And so I noticed everybody else had these orange gloves. And I said to my guide, I said, well, can I get my gloves? And I said, I think I'm missing them. And he said, oh, well, you won't need them. And I said, why? He's like, well, you'll be going on the back of a buddy. Oh. Now, he had seen my hand. He made an assumption that he was going to make a solution for how I could zip line and still swing through the air. But he never asked me if I could do it or not do it. He never gave me the rules of engagement of what that meant to zip line. And so I was very forceful and I said, absolutely not. I came to zip line like everybody else. I'm going to do it. I water ski, I ski, I kayak. I mean, I do everything. And luckily this other guide came over and he's like, yeah, you actually only need one hand to zip line. If you know, it's just for the break. And he said, so go for it. Here's your gloves. And what I realized is we make assumptions all the time about people's ability. Right. And so he was making an assumption, never asking me what I could or could not do. And I think, again, that happens a lot. And so there is a piece of having a disability that I'm almost always trying to overachieve or prove that I can. And that can be exhausting too. It's just always having to show, but I do love an adventure. So I loved zip lining. I hiked Machu Picchu this fall, this winter. Oh. So it's been and I went to the Galapagos Islands and hiked over the Galapagos Islands and saw the amazing animals. So yeah, there's a lot to this world that's so cool, and definitely get back on a plane, Aaron. It's the best.
How amazing is it that we live in this time where we can travel and see the world in the way that we can? It's amazing. It's humbling. It's exciting. It's adventurous. It's all
curious.
Those things. Yes.
It builds curiosity and interaction. Like we talked about it at the top of the hour. Like, it's that space of how do you expand your mind to think differently and be curious?
Yep. I think it makes you a better person too.
I think it makes you definitely a more interesting person for sure. Mm. Like it makes you interesting to talk to, and it expands your mind, where literally my journaling isn't just, I have a daily journaling practice, and it's not just about, you know, my mindset. It's about how do I want to see the world? Because now I've experienced things that have changed and shifted some of the mindset pieces. Mm.
It's your ziplining story is such a great example of, I think, how a lot of people, without even realizing it, just assume certain things. And I think we all might be most likely or guilty of just assuming something at some point in our lives about someone without, you know, not specifically meaning harm. I also liked the point that you made of sometimes feeling like you need to prove yourself. And I have a really good friend. He's been on the podcast 3 times maybe. And 10 years ago, he was in a car accident and he shouldn't have survived. The doctors said that there was very little chance that he would survive. And even if he did, he'd wake up and, you know, he would be, you know, a vegetable or something like that. Well, this guy is, he is an unstoppable force now. And, you know, he can make his way around with a four-pronged cane. And, you know, it's really changed his life. And it's amazing because he's taken this opportunity, and instead of becoming bitter about it, he has learned to take, he has taken this challenge and used it to help others. And it's awesome. But one thing that he always says is, man, I just have this drive to prove people wrong when they say that I can't do something. And that's one of the things that I love about him. And I think that having a healthy drive in that way might not be a bad thing, but it definitely can go too far.
Well, absolutely. And you need to create space for the balance too, right? Where it doesn't always have to be like, and I think to that point, you don't always have to prove that you can ask for help. And so that's a piece to what I've learned is, how do I not try to do everything and allow my friends and family to know when I can't do more or when I just need their help? That not everything has to be a struggle just because you don't have to overprove yourself all the time. But yeah, no, I think, listen, Aaron, I would never give up and I would never switch having this limb difference. There are moments in my life that wouldn't have been true, but this is my gift. Like, this is something that I was given to leave with the world to impact. But I will also say this hand was never my disability. This was my mind, because it's the way that I thought about it, not the way it actually was.
Mm. You're inspiring, Ruth. You're so inspiring. And I'm proud of you and where you are in your life. And you know, one of the last things that I wanted to cover with you, and again, thank you so much for being willing to do this with me. And I've just absolutely enjoyed this conversation. My mind is just expanding in the world of differences, and it makes me think about these things more. But I'd like to talk briefly about that person out there. Maybe it's a young person, and they've grown up maybe sheltered like I was, and they honestly don't know how to interact with somebody who has maybe a physical difference. What would you say to those people? How would you want somebody to interact with you?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think every person is going to have a different response. For me personally, I want people to ask, especially if it's asking from a place of curiosity. I want them to ask and say, what happened to your hand? I noticed it's different. And that gives me the opportunity then to say back, hey, I was born this way, and then engage in a conversation around difference. Now, there are going to be people who don't want people to ask. And so it's being respectful of people who say, you know what? I'm not comfortable answering. I am comfortable answering. So it's being okay and being courageous to say, hey, I'm curious. As long as, Aaron, it's coming from a place of curiosity, not a place of belittling, not a place of, you know, having to show that you're better. No, it's a place of curiosity. Hey, I'm wondering what happened. And then I can say, again, I was born this way. Here's how we all have, this is my difference. What's your difference? Like, because I'm so curious about how you're different, because being different is actually cool. So this is the way that I am. What's yours? And then that opens up the conversation to then what they've been going through or struggling with. And people then have to think about it. I mean, it's interesting. I had a woman that I was talking to the other day who said to me, you know, Ruth, you put this poll on LinkedIn, I think, about hiding and do people hide? She's like, I checked, no way. I don't hide anything. And she said, but by talking to you, I realized that I'm absolutely hiding parts of myself. I'm hiding the disability that I have that I've been able to not share with people during COVID because we've all been in Zoom land. She's like, I'm also hiding. One of my children has a mental health challenge. I don't tell anyone about that because I'm afraid of how they're going to judge me and how judge me as a mother. And so she's like, many of us are hiding. I said, yeah, that's my whole point here. So if we start to ask questions and that curiosity piece, it will connect us. And again, but I do think it's, Aaron, about being curious from a really good place. And it's also about respecting boundaries of if someone doesn't want to answer, it's okay. And not taking it personally that you can't ever ask anyone again, but that it is okay to ask. And that for me, that's important.
Yeah. Do you mind if I ask? Just, I think that you can gauge the situation too in a lot of instances. And I definitely would hope that that wouldn't be the opening conversation line for anybody who's approaching someone with some type of a difference to just launch right into a question of that sort.
But sometimes it is with kids because they don't have filters the same way. I often say to parents, I'm so grateful your child asked. It means their brain is working. It means they're curious. And it means you're not afraid to talk about something that's different, like disability. It means you're not putting that layer of, oh, we don't talk about that here. It means that you're opening conversation because, yeah, then you can talk about any difference because your child's going to have differences. Even if they seem like they don't, they're going to encounter difference themselves personally and around them as they grow up. So not making disability a bad thing. Disability is part of life. It's okay.
So I think we're coming down to the end of this episode. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with us? I want to give you a chance to give us the last word. I know that you're working on a book right now. I don't know if there's how much you want to discuss about that, but I'm really excited to get my hands on that when it comes out.
Me too. yes, I did my TEDx in the winter. And now the book is called Single-Handedly, and it's going to come out by the end of the summer, beginning of the fall. And it's really, honestly, Aaron, expanded memoir of the idea of finding freedom through stopping hiding. Because I really, when I stopped hiding, I got my life back. I got to experience joy again. It's how I literally re-engaged with the world and started doing the things I love doing again. So yeah, my job right now is to finish the book, to continue speaking. I speak with workplaces who want to expand diversity conversations in their workplace and inclusion. And I also consult with companies on how to build inclusive work environments and tear down the walls of miscommunication and build up the walls of inclusion.
Do you have a website? Do you have a way that somebody can reach out to you if they want to talk to you, if they're interested in what you do?
Absolutely. So definitely my first and last name. So RuthRathblatt.com. They can also find me on social media through LinkedIn, through Instagram, through Facebook. A little bit of Twitter. I'm not the huge biggest tweeter.
I can't do the tweeting either.
So I'm sure it's something that's going to have to change at some point, but right now I really love LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram, and that's where you can find me on social. And yeah, the Single-Handedly book is, I'm setting up a website right now, a landing page for people to be able to pre-order it. But definitely as people, I really appreciate the opportunity, Aaron, to share the message and to be on here with you. So thank you.
Well, I've certainly been humbled, and I'm definitely excited to read the book when it comes out. And yeah, thanks again for being on the show. Do you think that COVID has sort of been a blessing in disguise for you to give you that time to work on your book?
Absolutely. It was really, I guess, twofold. One is a time for introspection, right? For so many of us in terms of, how do we want to spend our lives? Who do we want to be spending it with? What are the things that are coming up? And so even over COVID, I developed a whole model around what I call the cure to inclusion, this idea of connection, of understanding, of representation, of empathy, and belonging. And so I was able to build that out and do some more thinking. And then, yeah, write a book, which is, it's really digging deep and trying to your point, have impact on someone else, just one person at a time. If I can say, I stopped hiding, can I help someone else unhide? And then they help someone else. It's kind of like that old school commercial. Like if you tell two people and they tell two people and so on, that's how this is going to work.
Well, thank you so much once again, Ruth Rathblatt, for being on the podcast. And thank you, if you're listening to the podcast, if you've made it to the end, I really appreciate it. I appreciate you. And I hope that you share this with somebody in your life. I hope that this episode has impacted you as much as it's impacted me. So I appreciate you, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.